Welcome to Entrepreneurs, the Playbook. I'm David Meltzer here with an incredible agent. It feels like deja vu for me. All these agents flying by. We got Darren Prince in the house. We had Bruce Tolner in the house. Now we got the Jerry Maguire of music with me, Mike G. He's a partner and an agent at UTA, which is an incredible firm, especially in the entertainment field. Welcome to the Playbook, Mike.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Well, we've had a lot of agents come through here. I'm a recovering agent myself, and worked in music, entertainment, but mostly sports, as you know. And the agentry business has changed a lot. And the music agentry business has changed a lot. What is the key to staying abreast of all of the changes that have occurred, whether it be, you know, within music, the intellectual property change, the distribution rights have changed, the venues and the events have changed, but the agents are kind of stuck in a position where they're still responsible for facilitating the talent and making money for those venues and opportunities that exist today, which are expanded and amplified?
That's a great question. I think we live in a day and age, especially as a music agent, historically, music just focuses on live, which is very transactional, I think. In the world we live, we have to be multi-hyphenate agents. So my thing personally has always been to be outside my comfort zone. So I want to learn about TV and film to speak that language. I want to learn about sports. I want to learn about digital. I want to learn about brand opportunities. I want to learn about ventures. Because when I'm talking to a client on a pursuit or a new client, I'm not just talking about music in the live space. I'm talking about every area of entertainment that the agency offers. And I think you have to be more entrepreneurial these days to last. You have to keep up with the trends, you know, and that's always been my thing. And I'm a creature of habit as far as I want to learn everything. So I sure I impose myself on other departments when I shouldn't, but it's worked out. And that's key for me.
So when I ran Lee Steinberg, the sports agency, community was a big part of Lee's philosophy. He was a visionary. The reason I got hired to be CEO of the firm was not because I was a great agent. It was because of my technology and venture background. Early 2000s, he saw the future of sports and venture and technology, which I'm sure you see in music as well. But he always taught community. And because of that philosophy and strategy, I've been able to build my own brand. If you talk to Darren Prince or to Bruce, we never would have imagined anybody ever. I was always Lee's guy, Warren Moon's partner. I don't think anyone ever knew my first name. And then the amplification of the stage theory was presented where everybody had an addressable community and you had an ability to build a community. We used to use philanthropy as our vetting process to build a community. So we would qualify all of our Aikman, Moon, Young, Evander, all the great athletes and say, look, if you're not willing to give back to the community a portion of what we make with you, then we don't want to represent you. And the only reason we did it was because we knew that if they were those type of people, they would build a community that would continue to amplify who they were. And it worked. Building a community today is easier than ever, but it's also more competitive than ever. And it will never be this inexpensive to build a community than it is right now, and it'll never be this less competitive than it is now. It's only going to get more expensive and more competitive. When you're building a community, which is truly the brands that you're building for this crossover opportunity that exists today, right? This every platform type of opportunity. What are some of the things that you're doing today? Because you have built some huge brands that have huge communities to build those communities.
I think with each artist and each act, it's different, right? Like I try to find out, and I learned this from the past, you know, as far as what I want from the artist. But what I've learned is I got to listen to the artist. What is the artist's goal? Why are they doing this? What's their intention? Where do they see themselves? Why do they do this? Why do they love this so much? And when I understand that, then it's easier for me to build that community around the artist. I've made the mistake in the past where I've tried to impose my will and thoughts that I think should be this way. But the reality is every artist thinks differently. They all think differently. And they're all special in their own rights. But it's really about helping them identify what their goals are and how do we get to their goals. Because everybody wants to play SoFi. How do we get to SoFi, right? Yeah. Maybe we start off at the Roxy on Sunset, which is a 500 cap room. You know, we have to walk them through this process. Then we show them, maybe we play the Wiltern, which is 2,400 cap. Then we get to the YouTube Theater, which is 6,000. Then you get to the Forum, which is 13. So there always has to be a plan in play, right? And you try to, look, some artists allow you to get really close to them. I know as an agent speaking, it's a little different in music because it's always the manager than the agent. I've made it a goal specifically to focus and have a relationship with each of my artists. Because you know this, as an agent, you need to have a relationship with the talent at the end of the day. So
that's the only way you keep a client, by the way.
That's the only way you keep a client.
Now, you have an exciting client that has reached a higher level now, going to play Intuit, Barclays.
Yes.
Now taking it to the next level, Raul Alejandro's.
Correct.
And what's the name of the tour?
The La Cosa Nostra tour.
Better said by you, although yo sé español, un poco de español. Hola, ¿qué pasa? ¿Por qué no comes la comida, amigo? All right, anyway, got that memorized. I'm kidding.
That's pretty good.
you're right at the stage with this talent that they're seeing the success. You just mentioned why all business, but especially sports and entertainment, it goes very, very slowly, then all of a sudden. But people don't see the very, very slowly. And it's very difficult to manage the ego when it happens very, very slowly. And then all of a sudden is happening right now for this young artist of yours. What are some of the challenges that he may be having with the all of a sudden moving up to what is usually a dream of playing places like Barclays and Intuit?
That's a great question. I think, well, first of all, he's such a great human being. So despite all the success, his ego has remained very humble, which I think he's ahead of the game just by staying humble. The challenges come more on the business side because when you get to a certain level, you want to produce a certain show. You want to make sure the artist makes money at the end of the show. That's probably the biggest challenge he's facing right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was a unique artist that we saw. We pursued Rao, I want to say, last October. We had a great meeting with him. And we sat in this room and, you know, we're just trying to get the artist to talk. In these meetings, you're just always trying to get the talent to talk. Yeah. And for some reason, I had this feeling in my heart. I'm like, tell me your goals. He's like, you know, I want to play like mainstream events. I'm like, oh, you want to play the Super Bowl? He's like, exactly. I want to play the Super Bowl. As soon as I said it, clicked. Long story short, so the pursuit went on for 6 months, but the next day, you know, we're partners with Clutch Sports.
Yeah.
And I put Farrah Leff, who like runs Clutch with Rich,
yep,
on the team. So we invited him to Anthony Davis's house. So he came to Davis's house and he got a chance to meet LeBron, and LeBron was great as far as like co-signing UTA and Clutch. And it was very organic. It wasn't like pre-planned or strategic, as you know.
As it sounded.
But that was a unique pursuit because everybody was trying to sign him. But I think there was a connection. There's always that human connection when you represent talent that you have to have.
And not every talent that we represent has that humility. And every agent.
Definitely not.
I remind myself, as I tell people all the time, every day, you're either humble or you're about to be.
Absolutely.
And that it held true for not only professionally for me, but even most recently personally for me. When my mom passed, I was humbled again. And I think it's a really valuable lesson in our business, the humility aspect. But you know the reality. You run into people that aren't humble. And we have to deal sometimes, especially if you work for large organizations like UTA, we have to deal with talent that may not be as humble as we would like them to be. And it creates a lot of difficulties in what we do because we are responsible for the lack of humility. A lot of times the talent's never blamed, and we know where the fingers point from above and down below. People don't like to blame the stars. How do you handle that responsibility when talent may not act in alignment with what your core values are or your humility?
You know,
No names.
No, I'm definitely not going to drop any names.
I'll use one from my past, Plexigo Burris, who 2 weeks after we fired him as a client, shot himself in the leg at a bar, illegally went to jail for shooting himself in the leg. Yeah. You don't have to use
names.
He
was a good receiver.
Good story.
First of all, it starts with me, right? Like, I'm very thankful. I'm a believer of God, that all my blessings really do come from above. So the agent has to remain humble in order to teach humility. And look, the reality is ego and not being humble comes from insecurity. So you try to find out what is it that this person, because most of it is insecurity, unfortunately, and that's where it comes from. So if I can figure out what makes that artist insecure and keep that artist grounded and always let them know, hey, we're in this for the long run. Things come and go. And it's okay to use examples of other artists that have like burned themselves out in the industry because of ego, right? It's a small business and everybody talks. So that's how I've dealt with it in the past. I know it comes from a lot of insecurity. There's a lot of pressure on being an artist. I mean, I could only imagine that every day, the art that you love to make and produce and put out to the world is going to be critiqued. And it's even worse now with social media.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have that thick skin to ever want to do that. I could barely take one or two bad comments on my social feed.
You sound like my wife.
It's crazy, but it does take a special person to really be an artist. So I try to understand, and empathy is really big.
Yeah, one of the other difficulties beyond the criticism and the scope, I remember flying into Seattle with Warren Moon, and he had gotten divorced, so he had to pick up his son from basketball practice like a normal dad. Our plane was late, we're hurrying through the airport, and he's the most gracious of all Hall of Famers, Warren Moon. He's the Hall of Fame of the Hall of Fame when it comes to gratitude and being gracious. And we're hurrying through, and some person's like, Mr. Moon, can I get your picture real quick? And he's like, I'm so sorry, I gotta go. And we're going, and the guy's like, you're a dick. Like in front of, and everyone in the airport's looking, right? And no idea what the interaction is, no idea that what had happened. I was right there, and I looked at Warren's face, you know, one of my best friends, and I could see it still hurt his feelings, right? Even though he knew he was in the right, it still hurt his feelings. He was so worried about everybody at the airport thinking he was a dick when he wasn't a dick. And it was really difficult for him. But the bigger challenge for the athletes and entertainers that I've represented is there's a huge energetic swing. And it tests the human psyche. You can look behind me, and people get excited just looking behind me. I don't think they can fathom the energy of standing on that stage or on that field with 100,000 people and a billion people watching you, the amount of energy that is fed through you to the audience, and then it's an immediate drop off. And this is something that I've tried to help my clients with, is this drop and rise. It causes all kinds of chemical problems, biological problems, and especially psyche problems. Have you figured out any mechanism to try to keep a level? Are there new like therapists, or do you guys provide this? Because we didn't in our day. I'm just curious how you deal with what I saw to be the biggest challenge, which is it's an antithesis to human psyche to do this.
Well, I've seen artists travel with their therapists, because that is true. When you are coming off stage, like, it's a different type of high, and you're coming down.
Yeah, it's worse than
that's heroin. Why they're, unfortunately, in our business, substance issues, because you want to keep that high. So again, that people don't really understand how important a team is to a talent or to an artist. It's everything, because they're your coaches at the end of the day. They have to look out for you, not only business, financially, but physically, mentally. And I think with this wave of managers and just the way there's such a focus on mental health, especially with artists these days, it's very important, and it is being provided. But again, each team operates differently. So it is
still a problem.
It's still a problem.
Give me a little bit of detours of the tour of where you're going and what we could expect.
Yeah, we're working on a number of tours this year. We have Lil Wayne's putting out the Carter 6. So we're doing a big arena tour. We're going to announce that here in the next couple of months. Yes, in the U.S.
No, like here.
At SoFi? Not yet.
Damn.
But we will get there.
I got my suite when we're ready, buddy.
I like it. We did have Romeo Santos play here a couple years ago.
Yeah.
We sold that out.
Thank God.
Our guy Young Thug is out. So, you know, it's been 2.5 years since he's toured, and he'll be out this summer. So we've got a lot of great tours. It's funny you mention Akon because he was the first major artist I ever worked with.
Really? So
absolutely.
Good
he was
choice.
The first 2010. I met him back then. He signed one of my acts.
Yeah.
And I've rocked with him ever since.
Yeah, he's a good person.
Yeah, he is
so
a good person.
So are you, Mike G. We have to do more together.
Absolutely. Appreciate you for having me.
I appreciate you. Everything that you do. There's always someone, the wizard behind the Oz, and that's Mike G at UTA. We appreciate him being here, a partner at UTA. But he's doing it right. It's not easy to be kind and generous in this space, and we appreciate your
generosity
and your humility. May that carry forward to everyone. That's what we try to do here. Remember, you're either humble or you're about to be. This is Dave Meltzer with Mike G on Entrepreneurs, The Playbook.